That's one comment. Corey, you want to talk about that?
No, I spoke to that type of thinking already, because it really reflects the mentality that we have to get above in order to be, you know, successful and thrive and not just survive. A lot of people that talk and think like that, if you set their lot in life, it is really reflective of the type of thinking that they have. We got to go beyond that, super beyond that. Like years beyond that. So it's very hard for me to get down there, be able to commit to that. That's the honest to God thing. We really, really got to be there better and there further than that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. There's another one here which I think we should... What this person wants to know, whatever became of the first jobs program? Apparently the government mentioned something about this. I don't know if any of you can speak to this.
Mentioned that is being rolled out. It was the word become of it. It will say what is becoming of it, because it's been recently launched. I know the nuts and bolts are being put together. Like the people we had on Brassard, I think 2-3 weeks ago, they were telling me in meetings, these are guys from the architects and contractors. They were called to meetings in the Ministry of Labor, along with other contractors and so on and so forth, about pulling together a pool of people to employ. And they're looking to employ 3,500 young people in the first batch. That's 3,500 young people. Where government is looking to pay half of the stipend, and the employer will pay half. And they will get work experience, they will get, connections, networking, and all that thing, and some money in the pocket. And they hopefully be able to go on to work with a more experienced practitioner or start their own thing. So that is being ironed out and rolled out as far as my information. But I think, in fairness, I think Sarcombe could actually find out what's happening with our program and get that information from the people in the know, the people behind the scenes actually working for that. It wouldn't be fair for us to answer that, in that we are not intimately involved and it's not one of our programs.
Mm-hmm. This other WhatsApp says, I had no late days, only 2 sick days and all high appraisals in 8 years. I was told my retrenchment was because I had in 8 to 10 years in service. My question is, why other workers of equal and far lesser years in the same sector I was employed still working? This retrenchment was total victimization and carried out incorrectly. And let's moving on. I'm just going through some of the comments here.
Let me speak to that, because that particular writer, if my memory serves me correct, is really echoing the same sentiments of the Prime Minister. Because I heard the Prime Minister on this very station in the news talk about a sabotage process. And from my understanding, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet of Barbados, right, wanted to ensure that there was no political involvement in the retrenchment process. So they removed themselves from it. They wanted to ensure that there weren't any petty things from within the various ministries and so on. So they took the permanent secretaries out of it. And it was done at a centralized level at the personal administration division. And so it was a centralized process. And I think it focused, in my opinion, too much on numbers. And therefore, we have, and Marky and I could speak to this too, they were permanent secretaries calling, crying about some of their best workers, their retrenched, and leaving some that weren't the best, to say the least, all the time. So that was a serious concern for me, because I thought that this was a grand opportunity for the country, for the better of the country, to get out some of the slackers, and we lost a golden opportunity in doing that. By not looking at things like appraisals and so on, when we were looking at dismissing people, or we were looking at retrenching people.
This other WhatsApp, this person says that he's in his 40s. 7 months without work, and I'm going nuts. As a male who's accustomed to working and now none, depression is a seriously real, real, real thing. I'm feeling this guy's pain here.
Yep.
What can be done for people like this? I mean, what services are available so that they can get some sort of counseling or something? How can you help a person like this in their mid-40s and find themselves out of work? Question to anyone.
counseling was offered under the retrenchment program. Mm-hmm. There were 5 counseling sessions, and a lot of them, when I discussed it with them, as when we did the interviews, they blankly refused. But all that was offered. Could you ask him to call the unit? You could give him my number. He could call me, and I would personally work with him to assist him. Because I know to be retrenched and not having the job, especially, I found the men, most of the guys were more upset than the females. And could you ask him, give him my number and let him call me. I will work with him. The number is 832-0092. My name is Hermes Butcher. You could call me anytime. My job is not an 8-to-4 job. You can even call me today when the program is finished. I will have a conversation with you, and I will come to visit your home and see where and how I could help you as quickly as possible.
All right, let's take this call, Elaine. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good day. How are you guys doing today?
Fine, thank you.
All right. I wasn't going to call. I was just listening, but I heard Corey mention something just now that raised the antenna. And I kind of agree with what he said, because I worked in a department where, in fact, when the layoffs were indicated, it was mentioned that interviews would be done, and they would look at the worker's personal situation and see if, you know, you're the only job earning the home, and if you have a family, and what other financial commitments you have, like, you know, if you're paying rent to government, if you really were financially strapped and really needed a job or not, because there's some young people who live at home, and if they were laid off, you know, their parents and other people could support them, whereas there were others that were, you know, that had wives with children, and you know, they were the only breadwinners, and they had to pay rent and or mortgage and that type of thing, plus all the bills. And, you know, some of these people that were the point people in raising a family were laid off. And I was kind of surprised that a better interview process wasn't done. I mean, like, I understand that they wanted numbers, but when you release that responsibility to a general office with admin and human resources, I mean, people were just getting letters like crazy where I work. And you know, a lot of these people were people that were the only people that were working in the house. And, you know, we were all surprised when you saw the amount of responsible people with bills and stuff being sent home. And the salaries weren't very big. I mean, people that was working for $1,800 a month, $2,500 a month, out of that, when you're done paying your bills, you end up with bare $400 in your hand to stretch. It was amazing that some of these people with families were being sent home. And, you know, it was, and up to today, the situation haven't been rectified. But, you know, yeah, you don't want any political involvement, but you want a sense, a level of common sense and humanity in what you're doing, especially if you're in your 50s. If you're in your 50s, and right now when I write applications in the private sector, public sector, I apply for jobs in government to tell me I'm too old, right? And I was in the military. I gave service to the government of Barbados and the people of Barbados for the time I left school. You know, came out and was working, and now I'm trying to, you can't even get a job in the police force, God, to tell you you're too old. And the police want responsible, mature individuals, and as you try to say, well, you in your 50s, they don't work out here for you, so what does that person do? You know, you're too young to retire, you know, and so you got all these responsibilities. The private workforce don't want you because you're in your 20s. You don't have a degree, and even if you got a degree, it doesn't matter. So there's a large cadre of workers and people in Barbados in the 40s and 50s with responsibilities and families that are not attractive to the private sector workforce, because you don't want to pay them what due to the experience and work and maturity. and the value to bring to the work. You prefer to hire somebody in your early 20s where you could give them $1,200 a month because they could go home and the parents can help them. You can't do that to a person in the 50s that got, you know, mortgage and all that thing, but comes with a wealth of experience, a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of maturity, you know. And that is the situation that is going on in this country where people are not being interviewed. And up to 3 weeks ago, I applied for a job, as I understand, the wanted marshals in the court system. And an MP forwarded my information up to the system because they saw my resume. I saw that it was a very good resume and thing with military experience. The next thing I hear that I too old to do the job. Now, you know, you're mad at your 50s. I got at least 15 more years of working in me before I retire. Right? And that's only till you get to retirement age. And you're saying that I am worth 15 more years in government as a court marshal or even a police officer. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So who is there to look at these situations? You know, you can't leave these to the public officers out there that are just trying to fulfill a numbers game. You have to put these people in front of good, responsible individuals that can look at the bigger picture, okay? And can allocate jobs to people based on their responsibility, based on their financial commitment, the family commitment. You know, the ability to do a good interview and that type of thing, your CV, is more to it than just, say, well, we got to cut 3,000 people or 5,000 for a program, and we can cut don't care what, right? So, you know, I've been listening to the program, but when I heard Corey Lane talk about what he talked, I had to call.
All right, sir. Please stay on the line. Don't go off. Please do not go off, because I want to get some reaction. Before I ask Corey to come in here, how have you been coping in terms of, you know, what are you doing? Are you doing some other little side job or something to pay the bills?
You're back and max out your credit card. You answer?
Mm-hmm.
So that's been maxed out. And I applied to the Ministry of Transport for a Z to drive something. I applied to NCC for permission to set up a stall on the beach. You know, wherever you turn is no, no, no. Now, you got a number of hotels about to be built on beaches. Right now, they're, you know, you apply to NCC for a stall to do a business on a beach, a reputable business. And some of these hotels got the beach tie off. They don't want the stalls on the beach. And there's room for stalls and kiosks on certain beaches. And they're not, you know, they talk about enfranchising people in Barbados or helping small businesses grow. But wherever I turn to try to do something, there's a stumbling block being placed in front of you when you're trying to do things legal, okay? Because you can't go on the beach and try to sell jewelry or try to do anything because the NCC guards are on your back, no problem. You're going to apply to do it fairly. And when you go now to meet with people, the people at the own that got the hotel, ain't want nobody on the beach. So what does a normal Barbadian do? You know, it really amazes me that when a local in Barbados, an employee trying to take two steps forward, some other thing is happening to slow down that person. And government needs to help facilitate these same loans that you're talking about. A lot of these small businesses that people train. It ain't the first time in the banking system when a lot of people that worked in the bank many years ago got lovely payouts. And they went to open shops and businesses. And within a year to 2 years, they had to close down because nobody wasn't buying anything. So I don't think the problem is Barbadians being able to try to set up small businesses. That was always the case, right? I raised up in with my family running business themselves, food business, souvenir handicraft business in the tourist sector, you know? So, you know, business is in my blood. But when you try to go to do it the right way, or you try to get government to help facilitate you to start some of these businesses, there is either the area is too much people might be interested in that area, I don't know. But I always try to look for a niche that nobody else is interested or doing. But right now, the hotel's got all the beaches shut off. And whenever you go, imagine you going to apply to NCC for permission to set up on a beach. And this particular beach in Christchurch, I'm going to call the name, right? But there's no kiosks on the beach. They've got the kiosks on their property. And there's space on the beach to hold to have a kiosk or at least 5 or 6. But because they're providing kiosks in their hotel, NCC is telling you that that the hotel don't want any more kiosks on the beach. And I can't believe how a hotel to come into Barbados and determine to the government of and people of Barbados who will be on the beach. Well, right. Gabby, I think, you know, sometimes you got to go and protest.
Your point is taken. Corey, advisor on poverty, what can be done for those individuals in their 40s, their 50s, who are unemployed, willing to work, they have the skills, but they're just getting the royal turnaround like this gentleman?
I mentioned this when we talk about the systems. One of the things that we forget many times, we hear these statistics and we just gloss over them. If you look back, I think it was 2013, 14, where people would have reported that we would have lost an estimated $1 billion in investment and over 1,000 jobs simply because of the bureaucracy and the turnaround time in terms of getting permissions and so on. This is an area where we can see definitely an immediate improvement in terms of finding jobs for all. So when you talk about people over 40, when you look at the system of inclusiveness and ageism, as people mentioned, once we are able to get growth and get the society going, we should be able to have a model that includes all. Now, I want to, before I forget, because I mean, the guy brought up a very good point earlier in terms of the sending home of people and not taking these particular considerations in terms of people's age, 2 people from one household, and so on. A very, very important point that we cannot miss is the fact that the government was against the clock. And the BIRD and the IMF program, they had certain timetables and so on. Now, if you believe that we should have taken the extra time to ensure that people's livelihoods and standard of living were being maintained, you would disagree with what ended up happening. If you agree that we should have gone with time because we wanted to get the assistance for the country as a whole, overall interest of the country, you would agree with what happened. And if you're really from opposite or opposition, you would disagree regardless of what happened. And that is a point I need that must be underscored. Now, since I don't have all the answers, and programs like this also give me the opportunity to say to the public, listen, when we look at what this gentleman has described, because some of the things that we're working on in terms of poverty is really the mentality of poverty. And understanding that poverty is a large proportion of it is in, you're poor because you think poor, you act poor, etc. Intergenerational poor poverty comes in there as well. And these are the things that happen. But what I want to say to the public at large, because I or no one has all the answers, the thing is can you make a contribution in helping us to develop policies and programs to help this gentleman? He said he's willing to get into business. He said he touched on one of the biggest problems we have with people getting into business. Everybody wants to help his team. Everybody wants that link. Everybody can set up next to each other and sell his kit. And how people invent again into business to diversify, etc. So my appeal, thank you, if I could use that your question to appeal to people in terms of sending forward their recommendations. The idea forum is another area of which people can come out. They had it really understood it wasn't working as effective as it should. They could look into that. where people really, as Barbadians, understand this is our country, and collectively, we should be able to harvest all of the ideas out there to make this a better place for all.
All right. Sir, thank you very much for calling. I would strongly suggest that you call that household mitigation unit and see what they can, how they can assist you as well. We try to take another call before the latest at 12:30. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sanka. Good afternoon, everybody.
Oh man, you can talk long, so you know that you can. This is your first few balls in this over, and you can hold on after the news. Go right ahead.
Okay. No problem. There are two things which concern me, and I'm not going to try to address what the last caller was talking about in terms of old people and the challenges that they have. I want to more address the young people and the things that I hear. I heard just now a situation where we have people who are going to people's houses in order to teach young people or to assist young people in writing resumes, right? Or on writing CVs and that sort of stuff. And that to me, I don't want to say it's foolishness, but that to me is what should the education system, that should have happened. They should know how to write a CV, how to write a resume, and they should have been doing that.
But you know, there's a difference between what should be and what actually is. But I don't want you to go away. Stay on the line. We have to break for the latest at 12:30. And we'll be coming right back to discuss even further this whole aspect of retrenchment and how people are coping and what can be done to assist them. And we want those who would have been retrenched and maybe you're still not working to please give us a call here at 434-1790 or send us a WhatsApp at 266-4862. We'll break for the latest. And remember, this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material.
For building supplies, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all. At Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
For building supplies, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board, and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. This is Sanka Price with you along with Dennis Johnson. And of course, we're talking today about retrenchment, the pain of retrenchment, and how we're going to get, hopefully some people were able to put the pieces back together. We were conducting a conversation before we broke. Are you still there, sir?
Yes, Anka.
Good.
Okay. Now, yes, I'm dealing with what is and what should be, okay? And this is what I'm trying to address. The things that government can do and has to do. One, we have a situation where young children, where people leaving school have the impression that everything needs to be done for them or that they deserve to be given things or whatever, as opposed to the effort that they have to put in now in order to get jobs or in order to do things, okay? So therefore, when you are in school, the things that government now has to change in the educational system is the things that are required in order to show a person that, listen, when you now get out into the workforce, that is when everything begins. And now you have to do these things in order to try to get a job, in order to fight a job. It is not going to be just there for you. For example, so as I said, when you listen to children in the States talking about when they send out applications for jobs or when they send out applications to get into schools or whatever, they talk about they sent 100 applications, okay? They talk, does the sort of quantity that they talk in terms of trying to reach out to touch people. When you talk to people here, they say, oh, well, I sent out one or two, if anything. Right? And that, the people, and after the one or two get maybe rejected or not responded to or whatever, that's the end of it. They can't get a job. So therefore, they can't. I used to work for, studying architecture in my field, one of my first jobs was working in government. But then I was let go because of the first and last out principle. And they were letting out people. So therefore, I was the last in. So therefore, I was the first out. And then from there, instead, I didn't sit down and say, well, oh God, I can't get a job in architecture. Therefore, I can't do anything. What did I do? I went to work on a beach. I was working on the beach at Sandy Lane. And then from there now, my future shifted into a career now in tourism industry. And then from there, I worked up from the beach. I worked as night out at Sandy Lane. Then I went and worked in Bermuda as night manager. Then I came back and I was working as manager. All sorts of things. So therefore, you have to be also have the mindset to understand that, listen, just because you're trained in something specific, you now need to be able to take the skills that you have acquired in terms of learning and in terms of being able to see and take advantage of opportunity and then move in where opportunity presents itself. The next thing we don't do as well.
Before you go on to the next thing you don't do, I want you to just hold on right now, and I want you to stay on the line. And I think Corey's back there, so I want Corey to stay on the line too. But I have on the line someone who's also retrenched. We finally got her to talk about her experience, because I don't think she has been able to get a job back so far. Are you there, young lady?
Good afternoon, everybody.
Yes, good afternoon. You can tell, how long were you working in government before you were retrenched?
I was working in government from 2006, but I was at the ministry I was at from 2010. I was subbing around, you know, from 2006 to 2010, but then I was at the ministry mm-hmm. from then up to my retrenchment in November 2018.
And what was it like for you? I mean, you would have had responsibilities like everybody else. What
the retrenchment?
Yes.
It was horrible. I will not deny that.
Explain.
Actually, it still is, even though I recently started working again. I still feel some sense of, I don't want to say bitterness, but I still feel like, as an adult, you know, you hear children saying somebody failed them. Mm-hmm. But I felt like somehow, somewhere along the line, we that were retrenched were failed.
How so?
Mine was a seesaw of emotions. You're hearing that retrenchments are happening. Nobody's saying anything to you. You don't know what's going on, basically. So you go to work every day, and you are unsure if today is your day. And then you get a call, and it's your day. And then it is rescinded. And then you get another call a week or two later, and it's your day. Then that's really judgment day then. Having a house full of children, commitments to the credit union, insurance at the University of the West Indies. I was devastated because, you know, you hear about, oh, public sector workers and the civil servants. But I can honestly say I actually work. So it hit me hard. I will not deny that. There are lots of persons that I would have known that I would have worked with that were retrenched as well, and their stories, some are more heartbreaking than mine.
But how did you cope with that period?
Those were dark days, but I have to say, my mother especially, my partner, and even my children managed to keep my head up, because I recognized that this was not something that I had done. This is something that had happened to me, and I had no control over it whatsoever. And I went forward. you know, decide contact the household get mitigation unit. You do that. Someone comes to your home and they say to you that, oh, you know, we're with that ministry and we are seeking to help you, and you know, we will interact with the welfare on your behalf. Since I had never been, large family and all, I've never darkened the door of any social service in Barbados seeking assistance. I've always been able to hold my head up and, you know, provide for my family. We were not rich, but we were comfortable. It threw me into a tailspin because, you know, you start thinking about everything that can go wrong. You know, you owe the credit union. Suppose a year down the road, you can't pay them and they come for your home. You know, you start thinking about everything that can go wrong. I have to say, I spoke with Corey Lane on numerous occasions. He has been one of those persons who has, I don't know, helped me to keep the faith. Around school time, he came through with some stuff for the children. I'm eternally grateful to him. There are others too, you know, really numerous to mention who would have been there for me. I can say that I am one of the fortunate retrenched ones. There were days when it was really dark for me though, and I really did not see any light at the end of the tunnel. But I used to talk about it a lot. I used to vent. I used to get it out. So I don't know. Maybe that's what helped me.
So how long were you without a job? Because you said you recently started a job.
Back. I was without a job for about 13 months.
13 months?
Yeah.
A year and a month.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
And you were on welfare? You had to go on welfare then?
Well, you know, I would have worked in the public service. I would have heard the horror stories about the welfare department. I am not going to lie. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. And thankfully, I never had to, because, like I said, my mom rallied around me like something else. I can never repay her. She had me. I can never repair her. But it really hurts me because there are people who do not have that support system who have been retrenched. I don't think that their stories are being heard. They have a story to tell, and let me tell you, it would be heartbreaking. It would be heartbreaking having to decide who's going to go to school today and who's going to have to stay home. Having to decide if you're going to pay the water bill this month or buy food. Decisions. And at the end of the day, something is still going to be left out. You know, the household mitigation unit is touted as the mechanism, the support mechanism. It boggles the mind. It really boggles the mind because there were so many of us, and for the most part, they were mostly female, with families and with commitments and what's not. I think it caught most of us unawares. We didn't have any time to put anything in place. There was nothing to cushion the blow. It was just, this is what needs to be done. It has to be done now. I heard you mention just now how they send out one or two applications over here. I am at the University of the West Indies, and I will say this to you. Just last week, I was in conversation with a young gentleman, and he told me he sent out over 200 applications, and he received one response. One response, and the response that he received, he was unsure if it would have made financial sense with the salary that they were offering to go there. Bus fare gone up, you know, everything seems to be on the rise, but you're retrenched. So what do you do? Do you go and start up a business and get a loan from the trust loan fund and do what? And do what? How do you pay back? Suppose, you know, you don't want to think negative. Yes, you want to be positive. But the reality is that there's not much that a retrenched person can do but hope and pray. There is not much. Where's the job? Where the job? You know? And if a University of the West Indies graduate is sending out over 200 applications and finding it so difficult to even get an acknowledgement of receipt, you know, the majority of the persons at the bottom of the scale in the public service who were retrenched do not have a degree, for the most part. So, you know, you tell me. You tell
Sounds
me.
Good. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, come right in.
Because, one, I don't know who that particular individual sent those 200 200 things to. Okay, that's the first thing. And questions which I will have to be prepared to ask is that person only sending out applications in Barbados, for example?
I would assume
so. Is that person not able to send applications to overseas, to businesses, to try to apply for a job outside of Barbados? I don't know the particular situation. But what I was trying to reflect is that on average, you are going to find that people in Barbados, young people in Barbados, they have not been, I don't want to say trained, but they have been actually trained to do the opposite, which is to expect that when they get a degree, when they get a piece of paper in their hand, they now automatically will be given a job. Okay? And in that particular field in which they have that piece of paper. And we are saying, no, that is not the case anymore. You have to be prepared to change your focus as opportunities arise. You see, what is the opportunity that's available out there for you? Our market nowadays is not just Barbados, it is the world. The internet is the most important thing that has happened to this to any country, because now it enables you to apply for, to do a job from anywhere in the world.
All right, let me just slip in here. I would like to say that any parent, guardian, or younger person, or anyone really who has certain skills, the CARICOM skill certificates are available, and there's certain categories of workers that are allowed to travel throughout the Caribbean and work in whichever territory there is, and that is one area that should be explored as well.
Right, but beyond that, all I'm saying is you can go on the internet. I hear so many jobs are required in the state. We have the ability to provide particular services from staying in Barbados. I have a niece who is teaching English to Japanese children. She can't speak a word in Japanese, but because of the internet, she's able to go on, and there's a particular service or whatever that they needed people who are going to speak English, who are prepared to teach, and then she receives a check. Those are opportunities that are available. And the next thing which I keep on hearing on this program as well, is a matter of I did this, I did that, I did whatever. We are not taught to work in teams. That is one of the things we are not taught in our educational system. And when I speak in terms of what the government now has to do, is it about teaching us how to work in teams. I heard from the former president of the Architectural Association, when he's talking about new architects who are coming into the system, and their expectation that the association is to be doing something for them, as opposed to them getting together and putting themselves out there. As I said, when I was young, I got together with some friends of mine, with some other architects, and we put together a project, Bridgetown on Fire, which is the idea that we would then put go out there, show an example of our work or what have you, and then people will then be naturally interested. Well, okay, can you do this for me? Blah, blah, blah. This is what it is about, as opposed to waiting for certain things to happen to you. Now, government needs to change. One of the things which I have a big criticism about, which I have a big problem about, is that when I go to, if I go to a constituency office, I should be able to walk into the office and see a board, and a list of the board on that board shows all the particular jobs that are available. And then another list on another side of the board is all people that in my constituency that want jobs. And then somebody then should be able to say, okay, I can match you with this or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And every time you can come in, that is sort of community-level activity that needs to happen in terms of engaging people with jobs. So even if it's a matter that you see, listen, you just need some money quickly or whatever, so there, and you see this opportunity, let me go along and do that. Right? And these are the government. The things that government has to do in terms of changing the attitude and in putting the support systems that allow people to see and then take advantage of the opportunities that are presented to them whenever they come out.
All right, just hold on. Young lady, you're still there?
Yes, please.
Good. Based on your experience, how do you think this whole thing should be handled? It should have been handled. How could it have been handled better? And if so, in what way could it have been handled as far as you're concerned?
As far as I'm concerned, I do not believe that you can just look at somebody's years and determine, oh, they fall below the threshold, they have to go. Because they're persons who have been working forever, who don't have a good work ethic, who don't get to work on time, who don't do anything, and they're just getting a salary, you know? And these people were the persons that were kept.
So in other words, a sort of assessment, appraisal.
Definitely.
An appraisal system.
PRDS as an assessment, but I don't think it works. I really don't. I have become very disillusioned with the workers' unions in Barbados. In my opinion, they sat by and they were definitely silent when everything went down.
What do you want them to do?
They were getting my $26 before I even had access to my money. At least say something on my behalf. At least. That was the least I believe that they could have done.
In other words,
I don't know. To me, in public, they acted as though they were blindsided. But my thing is, at the end of the day, they're still working. They're still getting a salary. So it's like, oh, well. You know, things happen. I got that coming over. I don't know. I can't even begin to tell you. After paying insurance for health insurance for many, many years, I just got the letter saying, "Oh, your policy has lapsed. Goodbye." You know, it was.
Actually, yeah. You wanted to come to that. The fact that you had less income coming in. And how did this really impact everything that you had to do?
It impacted everything.
So
everything.
Your health insurance was canceled.
My entire family's health insurance was canceled. Entire family. It was canceled because I was the one who had care and control of that. The entire thing was canceled. Because I had lapsed.
And there was no consideration in terms of
none.
Being able to talk to someone, to being none. Able to put it on hold, or you pay reduced premiums
none.
For a period, nothing.
Nothing. And this a is terse one. Email followed by a copy of the said email letter form.
So what other challenges did you face?
Sanka, there were numerous, there still are.
after a year plus of not having a salary of the severance, you know, you want to settle as well as you can, most things. So that was gone in a jiffy, with the hope that by, you know, if I pay forward by at least a year or so, you know, I should be doing something again. So that'll be fine. You know, I have become this person in, and I'm speaking for me,
mm-hmm.
in terms of my credit union and stuff, it's like I am a new member after doing business with them for close to 20 years, even before I was working in the government public service. I have suddenly become this new member who are not sure if they can reach out to, who they're not sure, who they are, and this is the word, they're uncomfortable with the length of time that I am now, that I have started back working. You know,
I don't quite understand what you're saying. You mean you're on contract now then? Are you hinting at that?
Well, to say that I don't have a clue might sound strange,
mm-hmm.
but I really don't have a clue. I do not have an end date. I am still not certain, you know, what's up.
Because what the thing that's coming over in terms of my chats with some people who I contacted and who refused to speak on the program is that because they are on contract, some of the financial institutions are uncomfortable dealing with them, giving them any type of support whatsoever. Is this the experience that you're speaking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is after you were a member of the credit union
for close to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is one of the other challenges.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I know you have to go now, but I'm just wondering, for just an overview, what do you think, how could this thing be handled better? Okay, we went through the whole aspect of the proper assessment of workers so that you will know who's the best people to retrench. So a person who's hardworking, you wouldn't touch that person, but you'll touch one of the slackers. That wasn't done. It seems to just be focused on numbers. Then, after that period, you have to deal with the reality of the credit unions, the financial institutions, the utility companies, everybody,
mm-hmm.
and you have to interact with them. And I'm wondering about the experience that you face with the, like, say, like the utility companies, if you had any problems with them. And having gone through all of that, do you think that these companies need to have a more human face in how they treat people, especially
yes,
in these harsh times?
Yes, I do think that persons need to sit down with persons and really understand what they're going through. I don't know. You know, when people ask about the retrenchment, they say things, you know, really blasé, like, oh, you're only first to get retrenched, man. Something will happen. Yes, something will happen. When will it happen? You know, I think that, like you said, there needs to be a more humane approach, and every case should be dealt with on its own merit. I didn't get my severance and party it out. I had to attend to all of my business, and it was soon gone. And, you know, I really think that a human face could go a long way to helping persons cope with their reality. My reality might not be that of another retrenched person. And most definitely theirs might not be mine. But, you know, when I was retrenched and I went to the office there at Warren, they're offering you courses. But what about the bus fare to get these courses? You know? So I don't think that you could just do these things in a bubble and say, okay, that's it. This is what needed to be done. We had to do it. There are human beings being impacted by it. There's a ripple effect. I mean, from one thing to the other. It's like, no money, what about food? What about utilities? What about bus fare? What about things that previously would have been so simple for me to do? You got to think now about, how am I going to maneuver here? How am I going to navigate these murky waters? Because the reality is that there was nothing there for you to draw on. Nothing.
Young lady, thank you very much for entertaining my call, and I wish you well. Thank you so very much. Caller, are you still there?
Yes. Let me.
Yeah, you're going to wind up now? Quickly. Yes.
Uh-huh. Right. Because I agree with her 100%. A more human face has to be put on this earth. And I'm speaking in terms of what no government, I can't talk about the past. They messed up totally, in my opinion, this whole retrenchment exercise. But when she starts to appeal, let's say, to the unions are going to be there, and they're going to protect the people that have been there longest. The argument was put forward that you can't use the assessment tool because people are not being assessed on a regular basis. So therefore, you can't. There's going to be bitterness because, I know people who were good workers, because they were there for a shorter period of time, they still went home first. Now, what government, again, has to do, there is no reason for any child, any parent in Barbados to have to be worried about not being able to send a child to school, about having to make a decision as to which child to send to school today. Government needs to address that directly and ensure that every child in Barbados is able to get to school and then be given a quality education at any school that they go to. These are the things that government now has to be able to do and address to then gradually take the load off of the working class schools back. And another thing we haven't talked about, the amount of the problems of credit in terms of, and the debt that a lot of this country right now is living on credit cards. A lot of it. And there's no discussion about that there. So therefore, when you have a situation where you say, okay, well, we're going to provide these $5,000 loans, trust funds or whatever, and people then come and go for them. In a lot of cases, they're going for them first and foremost to pay some of the debt that they're in right now. We need to think in terms of the bankruptcy laws. What protects people and individuals in Barbados from exploitation by things? All these conversations are the conversations that government has to have in order for us to take Barbados forward and to alleviate some of the stresses that people right now are having.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution. Corey, you want to hop in here before you take a call?
Of course, thanks. I just want to touch on a number of things. The caller raised some very good points in terms of the debt. That's something that we've seen. A lot of people took the severance, et cetera, and they spent it out on debt, and that created cash flow problems. I have to leave that for another time. I do want to agree that the retrench process could have been handled better. In terms of notification, a lot of people had a lot of anxiety around that thing. In terms of preparing people mentally and other ways of what was coming, I think that was handled badly. In terms of the union did make representation directly to the Prime Minister's office and the Hotel Mitigation Unit for a couple of people, so I just want to put that out there. And then in terms of the fight for the credit union, the officers, including Ms. Butcher, et cetera, would have made contact with people like the head of the Bankers Association, your friend and my friend, Donald Pellicer, et cetera, credit unions, and we were able to negotiate some flexibility for a number of retrenched workers. So I just wanted to put that out there as well. But if some of that came up in the news, I think it needs to be underscored. When you ask me what's my role in this, and when you look last year, before January, we started the process with the IDB in terms of this digitization program. October last year, the government would have signed part of one agreement, and lastly, the Prime Minister signed off on the $40 million loan, which looks at retraining, modernization, and et cetera. Now, understand that particular program will see over 250 people trained under the unit and the Ministry of Science and Technology. We have 193 employees on contract to date,
And what people need to understand is that once that is rolled out, you're going to see better systems in government for all in terms of NCW, in terms of certificate of character. You're going to see people going and interacting with government agencies with less stress. You're going to see a better economy because the ease of business should improve, and then you see thousands of jobs. Now, I ask the persons out there, the ministers, to ask yourself the question, is that worth paying about 3 people in a unit to help negotiate and move that process on? What a lot of people don't know is that I'm not paid for this per se. After volunteering 20 years, but you can only see it. No, thank you. You like me, you watch your weight, right? But allow me to put the cherry on here. After you know, put the icing. On top of that, these people within this unit, they use their own money, money class included, with these special cases to make sure that people have immediate needs to put their food on the table, to provide vouchers, to provide. That's not even something that we would normally talk about, but that is something that's done by every single member. So yeah, I ask the question, is this worth it at the end of the day? And then allow people to answer for themselves.
All right. Thank you very much, Corey Lane, and he's the advisor on poverty to the Prime Minister, Mia Motley. And I think, Hermes, you want to give the numbers for the mitigation unit and have 1 minute to make a closing word?
Okay, I will go ahead and do that for her. The unit numbers are 535-5366, or you can call 832-1171. You can call Hermish at 832-0092 or myself, Adzel Stewart, at 266-7219. Our aim here is primarily to really care. I've heard a lot of things today, and we've dealt with a lot of things since we've been dealing with this unit. But the only purpose, a main purpose, is to make sure that Barbadians can try to see how we can help them to live a better life. We only got one Barbados, and the main thing that keeps us driven, especially here in Misha and myself, is because we basically care about people and care about the well-being of what happens to Barbados and Barbadians, despite of what anybody may think. So feel free to contact us, whatever your situation, whenever you will reach out. As Corey said, it's the household mitigation unit, although we primarily would deal with the retrenched, but anybody can contact us and we will see how we can help them. And thank you for having us here today. It was very enlightening.
All right, thank you so much. A number of things came out of this program, and I'd just like to recap here. The manner in which the retrenchments were handled, clearly is still an issue. Corey Lane made the point that the Prime Minister said that they were sabotaged, and based on what has been said here in terms of the manner in which people felt that they were unfeared because they were actual good workers, while people who were just slackers stayed on, and that was because there was no proper appraisal system or the assessment tool that was used to assess who should go and who should stay was not adequate enough. Another aspect that comes out is that they don't feel that the trade union movement, and I use that broadly, of course, did not play the type of role that they should have played in the whole process and give that sort of input. And then, of course, one of the big areas that we keep thinking all the time is the human face that was necessary to be shown by other agencies. And we're not only talking here about government agencies like the Welfare Department and others like that. And the Welfare Department always gets a bad rap, and I know they do a very, very good job, in my view. But they always get a hard time of it. But not only them, but the credit unions, the other financial institutions, the banks, some of the utility companies. Young lady talk about her insurance being just canceled because the policy lapsed. Nobody contacted and say, well, try to find out why did your policy lapse? How can we assist you to continue to have this coverage? These are these types of things that are not taking place in our society, which need to happen if we're going to build a cohesive society, and one where all of us can survive even when things are tough. And of course, one of the major points I heard from at least two or three people, family support, key. That is a key area. In other words, you're down on your luck, things are not going right, your family need to come around to help out. And as long as people are helping each other, then they can survive and they can endure and create a base where they can move on after that. I hope that you found something to take from this program that was interesting. I certainly heard a lot of pain, and I certainly heard, as I've just done here, ways in which the any round of retrenchment that has to take place again can be done much better. This is Sanka Price, and I'd like to thank you for being a lovely audience. God bless. Have a great day. Bye-bye.